From WIPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. Baltimore's mayor is on leave and under investigation after Governor Hogan called for an investigation of the $500,000 the University of Maryland Medical System paid its board member Catherine Pugh for children's books. Her defense lawyer confirmed the Maryland State Prosecutor has opened a case. The Baltimore Sun reports the city's ethics committee intends to discuss the book sales this afternoon, and Jack Young asked for trust as he stepped into the role of acting mayor.
The city of Baltimore is stable and moving forward, and the work is just beginning.
Baltimore Brew editor Fern Shen joins us to discuss what's at issue, and we ask Amy Madsen of Maryland Nonprofits how boards can ward off conflicts. It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. The University of Maryland Medical System, Kaiser Permanente, the Maryland Automobile Insurance Fund, Associated Black Charities, all sources of some of them more than $500,000. Baltimore Mayor Catherine Pugh was paid for children's books in her Healthy Holly series. Now Mayor Pugh, who on Monday announced she would take indefinite leave of absence for health reasons, faces accusations that she failed to properly disclose her business relationships. Last week, Pugh said the deals with the University of Maryland Medical System were a, quote, regrettable mistake, close quote. Governor Larry Hogan asked the Maryland State Prosecutor to investigate sales of Pugh's self-published children's books. The Baltimore Sun says that the mayor's lawyer confirms that investigation has been started. City Councilman Ryan Dorsey filed a complaint with Baltimore's Inspector General. Here to help untangle the Healthy Holly saga is Fern Shen, joining us by phone. She's the founder, editor, and publisher of the new site Baltimore Brew. Fern, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me, Sheila. Good morning.
Good morning. So let's start with some basics. Who gave Mayor Pugh money for books?
The first entity we learned about was University of Maryland Medical System, where she sat on the board. And then we began to hear about all the others, healthcare entities like Kaiser Permanente and Blue Cross Blue Shield. And then some donors that we don't know all of the identities of, but their donations came through Associated Black Charities. That was another $87,000 there, the University of Maryland Medical System. That was $500,000. When you total up what we've heard about so far, it comes to about $700,000, and, you know, I think we haven't heard the last of it.
Why? Let's start with the first one. Why was the University of Maryland Medical System buying books?
That's unclear, but they have said that this was that they wanted to support the ostensible purpose of the books, healthy lifestyles for children. But, coincidence of so much legislation that benefited that hospital network is hard to ignore. The mayor sat on the subcommittee, the finance committee's health subcommittee, so she really held
sway over. She was in the state senate then.
Yes, as a state senator. Most of this happened during her time as a senator. She held sway over, millions of dollars worth of contracts and legislation, introduced legislation that, affected and helped University of Maryland medical system.
Do we know if there's anything in the minutes of the board of directors that sheds any light on the rationale or how the deal came about?
No, I mean that's really the interesting question. What was this like? Was this a very direct ask? Was this sort of subtle? Did people enter into this, really legitimately thinking this was going to be a real boon to children's health? How was it done? We haven't seen documentation on that, and that's going to be interesting.
And if you can help us understand the time frame, Catherine Pugh, as a member of the legislature, had already served for some years on the UMS Board of Directors when the book deals started happening, correct?
Right, right. Book deals, she'd been there, you know, since the early, I'm not sure how long she'd been on the Board of Directors, going back to 2001, 2003. The book deals began in 2011. She conceived of it, 2012, 2013, 2015, and then after she was mayor, there were two additional ones. There were five altogether, 2017 and 2018.
So the money, which you said says totals more than the $500,000 that I initially mentioned, where did the money go?
That's unclear. And since the mayor has so far declined to release her tax forms, we've asked her for that. I'm sure other media have as well, asked for canceled checks. Any kind of documentation of what she's done with all this money, it's not clear. She did give $100,000 back for the fifth order of books, which, you know, kind of amazingly, the University of Maryland Medical Systems gave her $100,000 for books that were never printed and that they never got. So that was returned. But as for the rest of the money, where it went, how she spent it, you know, there's lots of speculation. There's her house that she bought with cash. That's a question. There are, you know, people are raising all kinds of things with good reason. There was a campaign contribution mini scandal in her office where a longtime staffer from Annapolis pled guilty to funneling $18,000 into her campaign. No one has said where did that money come from. Could it be from, you know, payments for this? Nobody knows. All that is a lingering cloud.
Well, there was a limited liability corporation, an LLC, set mm-hmm. up around the Healthy Holly publishing effort, correct? There was mm-hmm. a business.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
what do we know from the records of that business about what came in and what went out of that LLC?
So far, we don't know for sure. She has amended her filings with the state ethics office to say that the $500,000 that she received, to discuss whether that was her profit. She originally said that the entire thing was her profit, and then has since then said no. Each year it was only $20,000. But as for, you know, documentation from the LLC as far as what was received, we haven't seen that yet. So, you know, that's what I imagine that the investigators are looking into and demanding.
And does there seem from whatever money flow we do know about, is there any nexus or connection to campaign contributions?
Well, that's all a big tangle that needs to be sorted out. I mean, a lot of the people involved here are also big campaign contributors. One of the members of the board, Walter Tilley, pest control magnate, he is a campaign contributor and also received these large contracts to do work for UMMS. You know, there's all kinds of cross-hatching. MAFE, the person who was the executive director over there, went on to become a staffer for the mayor and to work as, managing her inaugural committee or the president of her inaugural committee. So there's, you know, all kinds of overlapping going on here.
That's Fern Shen, editor and publisher of Baltimore Brew, here on The Record on WYPR. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about money Mayor Catherine Pugh accepted for her children's book series, Healthy Holly. Where did the books go?
That is a mystery. Ostensibly, there's 60,000, if the documentation the mayor presented last week is correct, 60,000 books, at least we know, were printed. That's what the who runs the printing company up in Canada says. And so where are they? The school system has said there are 8,700 in a warehouse on Pulaski Highway. Yours truly went out there to see if I could take a look at them. Was not allowed to go in, and the media has not gotten a chance to, you know, lay eyes on those books. So the rest have been just, you know, here and there, one or two that have turned up. People have some got them through Amazon. I think that's, you know, you're out of luck if you're trying to get them on Amazon. Other people were handed books, they said, back in 2011. Some folks got them from the mayor herself when she was campaigning. It was her unsuccessful run for mayor back then. And they just, you know, others have, like, wow, I think there's one in my toy box that we came across somehow, and they've, you know, dug them up. So some scattered reports of them in you know, daycare centers and schools and libraries and things, but nothing in any numbers, so it's really a mystery.
What does city schools say about the books?
They have started to find some documentation. Initially, they said they had none, and now they're reporting some books, book orders they've recalled in recent years, but they haven't physically located them. Some have turned up at the loading dock, people remember. So that's a little fuzzy yet, too.
And they were not used in classrooms?
No, they were apparently reviewed by a school official as to whether they, you know, should be incorporated in classrooms, and it was, you know, deemed not something that, you know, could be used for instruction in that way.
Am I correct that Catherine Pugh did not recuse herself when groups that had bought books had legislation before the General Assembly when she was there, when she served as a state senator, or when they sought contracts with the city when she was mayor?
That's my understanding.
So how does news this week about other book deals with the insurer Kaiser Permanente and Associated Black Charities change the overall picture?
It really kind of opens it up and just makes this feel like something kind of mind-boggling in a way, just a huge sort of pay-for-play, almost a, you know, shakedown situation. It seems that she was going to groups all over the state looking for book sales, and it widens the scope of the whole transaction, the whole, you know, I hate to call it a scheme, but it's starting to feel like one. And I think it really, a lot of people who held out some hope there could be some explanation for this, that the mayor could survive politically. If there was any of that, I think it's kind of evaporated now, and people saw her her performance, her appearance on Thursday, and kind of put that together with this new information about how much of this was going on. I think it really, you know, presented a sort of a bleak picture.
Well, obviously, you cover, Baltimore Brew covers local issues intensely.
Mm-hmm.
How do you think this story, which is developing, of course, and mm-hmm. as you've made clear, there's many mysteries involved, how does this news affect the way citizens perceive city government?
I think, maybe in a weird sort of a way, there's an upside to this, because this has kind of peeled off the cover on, you know, really deep systemic problems in the city. I think people have felt mistrustful of city government, that there's a corrupt culture there, a kind of a pay-to-play culture, and this in a way really confirms it. And it makes a lot of people feel like, oh, wow, not only is the police department deeply troubled, and, you know, part of what's a large problem just for our city as a whole, but City Hall is part of the problem, too. So I don't know if this will be driving reform or just making everybody depressed across the city. I think you got to look to the Orioles right now to find any good news.
Fern, I appreciate your sharing your thoughts about it. Let's keep in touch.
Thanks. hope to do that. Take care.
Thanks, Fern. Fern Shen is the founder, editor, and publisher of the news site Baltimore Brew. At the On the Record page, we'll link to the Brew's coverage of Healthy Holly and Mayor Pugh's leave of absence. Short break here on the record. When we're back, what steps can nonprofits take to avoid conflicts of interest? I'm Sheila Cass. Stay with us.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. Three members of the nonprofit University of Maryland Medical Systems Board of Directors have stepped down. Four more are taking voluntary leaves of absence. An independent consulting firm has been hired to review the contract, some amounting to millions of dollars, awarded to board members, and to evaluate the medical system's policies related to conflicts of interest. Amy Coates-Madsen is Director of Programs at Maryland Nonprofits, and she's Director of the Standards for Excellence Institute, which is a project of that organization. Amy, welcome to On the Record.
Thanks for having me. I'm pleased to be here.
Sure. Let's start with the basics. What does Maryland Nonprofits do?
So Maryland Nonprofits, we've been around more than 25 years. Our mission is to strengthen organizations and networks for greater quality of life and equity in Maryland, of course.
Mission is to strengthen. How does being on guard against conflicts of interest fit into that mission?
Sure. So we have been helping nonprofit organizations uphold high standards in their governance and management since day one at Maryland Nonprofits. And we have a special program that we've been offering for more than 20 years called the Standards for Excellence. And this program promotes the highest standards in ethics and accountability in nonprofit governance and management and operations. And we encourage folks who are running nonprofits as board members, volunteers, staff members, to adhere to these standards and to do their best to offer their programs and services in a way that is in keeping with high ethics and accountability in their work.
How do you define a conflict of interest?
So there's, you know, many different types of conflicts of interest, of course, but I think the key item when we're thinking about a potential conflict of interest is sort of the benefit piece. And, you know, is an individual who is connected to the organization, like an employee or a board member or an insider, are they benefiting in an inappropriate way from an action or a transaction that's being made by the organization? So sometimes the conflicts of interest are purely financial. Sometimes they have other types of benefits. Sometimes the benefits may be more in the lines of nepotism or looking at familial relationships.
Give me some examples.
For instance, it could be, you know, purchasing a good or a service from a board member. It could be a board member using information that they learn by being one of the leaders of the organization to use that information to further their business. Maybe it's news about some kind of special something that's coming for sale or something that's being available. Or, you know, when thinking about the nepotism, maybe it's, you know, a board member encouraging the executive of an organization to hire a family member for a position of some sort. So what we at Maryland Nonprofits do is we encourage every organization to have a conflict of interest policy and statement. And, you know, we provide resources for our members so that they, you know, have model and sample policies that they can use and that they can implement in the good work that they do. Because we know that the nonprofit organizations that we work with, you know, are interested in, you know, ensuring that they're true to their charitable purpose. And, you know, one of the most important things of being true to the charitable purpose is, you know, ensuring that the charitable resources are used for the purposes for which they're intended.
if a conflict of interest arises, how should a board proceed?
So we'd encourage, again, each group to have a conflict of interest policy, and that policy should entail that every time someone new were to join this, you know, either a board member, staff member, or even a volunteer with significant decision-making authority, that they should disclose their interests at the time when they're initially affiliated with the organization and annually thereafter. So they should be, you know, filling out conflict of interest forms on a regular basis, on a proactive basis, at their initial affiliation and annually thereafter. And then if a transaction comes up that has the possibility of being a conflict, then it, the organization, you know, sort of the board level, that the board should discuss that. The individual who has the potential conflict should be remove themselves from the discussion and, you know, physically leave the room where the meeting is being held, and that should even be recorded in the minutes. And their attendance should not be included, you know, in the quorum for that part of the discussion and things like that. And, you know, if there is a situation where, you know, they're considering buying a service or considering buying a good from a board member, it's the nonprofit's obligation to ensure that they are, you know, getting the best deal possible. They shouldn't be paying over fair market rate for any services, and they especially shouldn't be paying over fair market rate for services from someone who would be an insider in the organization. So getting comparable prices would be vitally important in that situation.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with Amy Coates Madsen of Maryland Nonprofits, an association that offers best practices for nonprofit organizational management. Is there usually a sharp distinction between what is a conflict and what is not?
So sometimes, yes, there is a sharp distinction, and sometimes it feels more like a gray area where there is, you know, more gray area involved. And so we encourage organizations to really, you know, have a strong policy that they're rigorously carrying out in their work. And in fact, the Internal Revenue Service, which is the federal group that is, you know, regulating charitable nonprofit organizations, and the annual tax form that these groups file, if they're, you know, a certain size or higher, you know, asks, do you have a conflict of interest policy? You know, who's required to disclose under the policy, and how do you monitor enforcement? And you need to report that every single year to the Internal Revenue Service.
Is disclosure of potential conflicts enough of a safeguard?
I think that's a key first step, but the discussion around does it make sense for our organization to take part in this transaction, that's equally as important, I believe.
9 of the 30 members of the University of Maryland Medical Systems Board had deals benefiting their private companies. I mentioned 3 members have stepped down, 4 are taking voluntary leaves of absence. How does this type of incident affect public trust?
So the public trust is one of the most valuable assets of any nonprofit organization. You know, we depend on the public trust for, you know, receiving tax-deductible contributions, for our tax-exempt status, for being able to recruit volunteers, board members, even staff to our organization. So the public trust is something that we care a lot about, and we need to do all that we can to preserve the public's trust in all of our work. And you know, any time when there's a situation where folks are concerned about the accountability in an organization, you know, there are concerns around the public trust. And so that's something, you know, to be seriously considering at every step.
Yeah, a lot of concerns these days. Amy, I appreciate your talking to us. Thank you.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Amy Coates Madsen leads the Standards of Excellence Institute program at Maryland Nonprofits. At the On the Record page at WIPR.org, we have linked more information about Maryland Nonprofits. And there will be more about Mayor Pugh's situation today on Midday. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cass. Glad you're listening. Join us again tomorrow.
Hey,
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.